We'll call the March 10th meeting of the Legislative Coordinating Commission to order. And the first order of business is to approve the review and approve the minutes from the September 10th, 2014 meeting.
Move that.
Senator Pappas moves the minutes from the September 10th meeting. Any discussion? Look at them. Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. And then review and approve the resolutions establishing subcommittees, and there are three of those. Mr. Hubinger, do you want to introduce those?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. In your packet are three resolutions, sort of standard resolutions that have been adopted by the LCC in recent biennia. The first one reestablishes the Subcommittee on Employee Relations, which reviews and provides interim approval of labor contracts and compensation plans for state employees. It has 10 members, five from the House and five from the Senate. The chair rotates every 2 years, and in this biennium it'll be from the Senate. As required in statute, the subcommittee will expire on January 1st of 2017. Mr. Chair, do you want to take these up individually, or would you prefer to just do them as a group?
Maybe let's just do them individually. Does anybody have questions on this one? LCC-1. We need a motion to approve them, then?
Yeah, Mr. Hall. Mr. Chairman, I was going to move approval.
Okay. Yep. Representative Carlson moves LCC-1. On employee relations. Any discussion on the motion? Questions for Mr. Hubinger? All right, hearing none, all those in favor of that resolution signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. LCC2.
Mr. Chair and members, this resolution would reestablish the LCC Subcommittee on Administrative Rules. This group meets infrequently. It's met, I believe, four times in the last 8 years. It deals with complaints that members have about concerns about agency rulemaking. They can object to rules, and they can receive reports as provided in statute. The subcommittee is assuming responsibilities that are formally assigned in statute to the LCC. The subcommittee has four members, two from the House and two from the Senate, one from each caucus. The chair will rotate to the House for this two-year period. And like the Employee Relations Subcommittee, it expires January 1st of 2017.
Chair, I move the resolution.
Senator Hand moves LCC-2. Any discussion or questions for Mr. Hubinger? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Then LCC-3. Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and members, this resolution reestablished the Advisory Committee to the Office on the Economic Status of Women. This group is also small, has four members, two from the House, two from the Senate, one from each of the caucuses. Its duties is to provide guidance to the Director of the Office on the Economic Status of Women. It also expires on January 1st in 2017. It meets infrequently.
Okay. Senator Pappas moves LCC-3. Any discussion on that motion or resolution? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. And then we are on to item number three on the agenda, review and approve the salary roster. Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and members, in your packets are two rosters, one roster of staff from the Joint Legislative Commissions and Joint Agencies, and the second is a roster from the Legislative Auditor's Office. These reflect the current staff and reflect increases in salary only due to appointments or promotions or salary increases that were approved under the salary plan that was adopted by the LCC in 2013.
Chair.
Senator Hand?
Just a question, Mr. Huebinger. Does this reflect any additional positions being added to the roster from the last time we had this before the committee?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, I believe the only additional position is the director of the Legislative Water Commission that was established in statute in the 14th session.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Does the Water Commission not have any other staff besides the director?
Mr. Huebinger.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Pappas, the LCC provides some administrative support as well.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Huebinger, have there been any, last time we approved this would have been last summer?
Mr. Huebinger, sorry.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, the original plan would have been implemented in July 13 after the House and Senate each acted. The Senate adopted some additional increases in July of 14. Following the tradition or pattern, the LCC implemented half of those increases. The pattern is for the LCC to adopt half of the increases approved by the House Rules Committee and half of the increases approved by the Senate Rules Committee.
So, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Huebinger, does this roster include any salary increases? Are there, like, step increases or, you know, people have been promoted from one position to another? Are those incorporated here?
Mr. Huebinger.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, like the House and Senate, we also have positions that are tracked, where from a Commission Assistant 1 to a Commission Assistant 2 or Revisor Attorney 1 to 2, and those salary increases are reflected here. They follow the plan.
Mr. Chairman, I'm perfectly willing to vote for this today, but I'd like to see those changes. And also, Mr. Huebinger, what is your interpretation of what NCSL is doing in terms of analyzing your salary ranges?
Mr. Huebinger.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, and for the other members, the Senate Rules Committee adopted a plan in last summer to have a salary study done by NCSL. It's a market study, and the LCC positions were included in that study by action of Senator Pappas, who was chair of the LCC at the time. The NCSL is doing a market study of positions within the joint offices, and so position by position, not looking at the incumbent but at the position, comparing to external markets. Both public and private.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yep. Representative Thiessen.
So the chair of this committee can just direct that without a vote of the committee?
Mr. Huebinger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Thiessen, the LCC chair has great administrative responsibility or authority for the joint offices. And Representative Thiessen, the cost is nominal. I believe the entire charge for the study for both the Senate and the LCC is $5,000.
Any further questions? Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Huebinger, just a question on the legislative auditor roster that you provided us. The name second from the bottom page seems to have a rate and an annualized salary that don't quite seem to be correct. Is that a discrepancy, or is it something I'm not understanding and how that's going?
Which page are you on, Senator Hand?
It's on the roster for the legislative auditor.
On the first page?
There's only one page to the roster.
Oh, sorry. Second from the bottom.
Second from the bottom has a pay rate that seems to be higher than annualized salary amounts for people.
Half-time position.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Mr. Nobles.
Jim Nobles, legislative auditor. That is a person who we have brought back from retirement. That's the designation of what a pro appointment means. So it's a part-time position.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles.
Any other questions? Representative Loon.
Mr. Chair, just on the LCC salary roster, there's two names that are shaded on there. Is there, and there's no FTE percent listed. Are those new positions?
Mr. Huebinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, those are two positions where they are on the payroll, but in the process of ending their employment through retirement. And so I think they are actually off the payroll now or will be within the next couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Any further questions? You need approval on this?
Yeah.
Is there a motion for that?
So moved.
Senator Pappas moves, I assume, both of them?
Yes.
Is that correct? Both salary rosters. Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. And then the LCC housekeeping legislation. Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair, members, in your packet is a revised format version of an LCC housekeeping bill. Thanks to Representative Hoppe and to Senator Pappas for carrying this legislation. It was introduced, I believe, last week. I think they're non-controversial proposals. There are basically three segments. Sections 1 through 3 relate to how the legislature, the Senate, the House, and the LCC engage in professional technical contracts and generally have us, the legislature, conforming to the changes that were approved by the legislature in 2013 for executive branch agencies, giving them somewhat more flexibility and clarifying responsibilities. And so for the small number of contracts that are implemented by the House, Senate, and LCC, we would have those same provisions applying to us. Section 4 is a highly controversial position that relates to how the chair rotates between the House and the Senate, proposal to change it from once every year to once every 2 years. The Speaker and Senate President are talking about that now. Section 5 is a reporting requirement for the legacy website, which the LCC manages on behalf of the legislature. And then Section 6 through 8 are clarifying provisions for retirement provisions and how they apply to part-time and temporary staff. We believe this has no fiscal impact on the legislature, so solely serves to clarify eligibility for retirement.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wondering, which legislative committees does this bill travel through on its way to passage?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, the bills have been referred to state and local in the Senate and to House Gov Ops in the House, go to state departments if there's some sense that there's a fiscal impact, and then to the Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman and members, it was my suggestion that the LCC chair rotate biannually instead of annually like the Pension Commission does, because the LCC doesn't meet that often and you just get used to the job and it switches to someone else. So, and do we need to change the language if the chairman would agree that it would start immediately? Do we need to make it retroactive on 12.4? Say Section 1 and 4 is effective retroactively from January 1st, 2015.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas.
Yep, Mr. Hubinger.
So if the members wanted to have a discussion about that, or if that was okay.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Thiessen.
I would rather keep it annually, but we're not going to be debating the bill tonight, I don't think. So, but I'm wondering why we're making Section 1 and Section 6 to 8. Well, Section 1 retroactive to January 2015. Have we done this already, and there's some contract that we need to make it retroactive for?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chin, Representative Thiessen, it does not need to be retroactive.
Okay. And the March 20, 2013 retroactivity date for the pension changes?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chin, Representative
Thiessen. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
It's okay.
This was recommended by Mr. Martin from the Pensions Commission. I think it goes picks up the date for the longest serving person for whom this clarification might be helpful.
Okay. Right. Yeah, right. Yeah, there's no approval, obviously. This is legislation, so it's just for information. Any other questions from this group? All right, then we'll move on. And next is presentation of proposed 16-17 budgets for joint legislative offices and commissions. And Mr. Hubinger, do you want to start with yours, and then maybe you can call up the others as they're in that order? Yeah.
Mr. Hubinger. Chair, members, there's a multi-page document in your package that's labeled joint legislative agencies and legislative commission budget proposal for 16-17. We're, as the chair indicated, we're just putting these proposed budgets on the table for discussion. We're not asking for any action to be taken at this point. Under the LCC statute, the LCC is to recommend budgets to the state departments, divisions in each body. And so the idea would be for either the full commission or the executive committee to meet at some later point and make those recommendations. Mr. Chairman, members, the second page is a summary of all of the budgets. The base budgets for all the joint offices is about $16 million. Just for perspective, the House budget is about $30 million, and the Senate budget is about $22 million. So overall, the LCC budgets are around 25% of the legislature's budgets. We show in the summary page the FY14 expenditures, the base budget for FY16, and then proposed amounts for 16 and 17. Some commissions have met and recommend budget increases. The Audit Commission has done that, LCCMR, sorry, SAMS, and the Energy Commission. The other budgets are all shown as same level budgets pending action by the LCC. For information's sake, halfway down that summary page, we show what the cost of health insurance at 4% a year would cost. That's a 10-year average. MMB has not predicted or estimated insurance yet for calendar years 16 and 17, so 4.2% is just a 10-year average. The second line is what it would cost to implement the governor's standard 1.8% increase in compensation for state agencies, what that would mean in terms of the joint offices. These numbers do not include the non-general fund. They don't include the legislative auditor's office because they have a separate proposal for a budget increase. Mr. Nobles will cover that later. We've asked each of the directors to briefly go through their budgets in just a few minutes to provide an overview about what's in them and what the change levels are. And first up would be Paul Marinette from the Revisor of Statutes.
Just a reminder to members, we're not asking for this budget to be approved here. We're just reviewing it tonight.
Chairman, members.
Mr. Marinak.
Paul Marinak, the Deputy Revisor for Drafting. I'm pitch hitting for the Revisor tonight. She can't be here. In the document that Mr. Hubinger gave you on the third page, it has a summary of the Revisor's budget. I'd like to point out two of the change items. The Revisor has also provided an executive summary in your packet, which does a good job in summarizing the need for the change level requests. I've also brought Tim Orr, who's the Deputy for Information Services, so if you have specific questions, most of these or all of the changes deal with computer services. We'll try to get answer those questions or get you the answers that you need. If you look at the base budget between fiscal year 16, the base and the proposed, you'll notice there's an increase there. That increase is $594,600. That change level is to fund the Revisor's request to add five additional computer services positions to the legislature. The Revisor's executive summary demonstrates the need. The Revisor has concluded that we cannot continue to maintain the same level of service with the existing computer staff we have. It's become impossible to make any major advancements in the system. We have been prioritizing the absolute drop-dead fixes that we have, but the list of things that we need to program to support the work that the House and Senate does continues to grow. We have multiple single-person points of failure on computer staff, and the Revisor would like to address those issues. And then finally, there are transition issues that all staffs are covering. The Revisor's office is dealing with those transition issues, and the IT staff, as you know, the experience level is very, very high. It takes quite a long time to bring people up to speed, not the programming aspect of it, but understanding what the legislature does and how to provide that support. And so ideally, if she brought these people on staff, we could provide a more orderly transition, a knowledge transfer to this highly technical area. So that's one of the change levels. The second change level, you notice on the three columns in the right-hand part of the page, this is a change level that the reviser is putting together to respond to requests from Governor Dayton. There's an initiative in the governor's budget to ask the reviser to program and maintain an electronic rulemaking record. Mr. Kudelka from the PCA is here. If you would ask, you need to ask questions about that initiative. If that is approved by the legislature, the reviser would do the information gathering and the planning in fiscal year 16, the build in 17, and then you notice the base in 17 going forward. That would be the permanent increase to the operating base. The agencies have the permanent responsibility for maintaining the rulemaking record. That isn't always done. There are a number of provisions in the law that require notice to you folks or information to you folks, and it's usually done by paper. There's a provision in the Administrative Procedure Act that directs an agency to share each rulemaking docket and a copy of a rulemaking record for every rulemaking. Sometimes that's done electronically. Often it's done in paper. We're hoping that this would replace that. The other thing I think it would do, it would be to enhance legislative oversight. If the reviser's office took on this task and did the programming, we would ensure that each member, each committee, had the information and had the reports and the web access to provide meaningful legislative oversight. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to require the transmission of paper when we can do all that electronically. I think the reviser's office is being asked to do this because we have a long track record in preserving that sort of data. We've been maintaining the statutes for 75 years. We maintain the statutory database, the session laws, the rules, so it's logical extension to host this sort of primary material on our website. So those are basically the two change items. As I said, the documentation should address the specifics, but I'd be happy to answer any questions you have, or Mr. Orr, or Mr. Kudelka.
Questions from the members? Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, when you referenced the five additional positions, what's the status of software and the equipment itself?
Mr. Marinak.
When the new system was designed, we purchased commercial software that is highly customized to do the work of the legislature. One of the dilemmas we face now, when you do that, when you buy commercial software, every upgrade that comes out, we have to accept that upgrade or they'll no longer stand behind the product. When you do that, especially with the high level of customization that we have to do the support the work that you folks do, there are problems. Things break. And so if you look through one of the budget requests is to provide support to do the testing that's necessary. We have a very, very small window to make these sort of computer changes. We can't do it during the legislative session. We can't do it during the summer when we're editing and publishing the statute. So we have this narrow window in the spring and the fall to do this programming. With the present support that we have, we're not able to do that. Probably the next great change in automation in the legislature will be to slowly eliminate paper, more electronic access. If the House and Senate decide to do that, we want to be in a position to support that. We're not now. If you notice, one of those positions would be, we call it electronic workflow, but it's much more than that. It would be to support the decisions that the House and the Senate make to try to eliminate the paper and to try to automate those systems.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I understood the need for staffing. I was just wondering about the software and the equipment itself, and you do that automatically then.
Well, we have to. But that's the dilemma that any office that is required by that software,
okay,
you have to upgrade it.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Marinak. Just I'm looking through your line items in the budget. Just trying to understand, you've got some significant, for example, printing and advertising, you're saying an actual 14 of about 109,000, and it's going to go up to 226.
Yeah.
Further down, you've got communications at 10,000. Now it's 20,000. You've got some fairly significant jumps in some of these things. What is that related to? Why would you need to have a higher budget for printing and advertising or communication or a significant increase in supplies, space rental? There's a lot of things here that seem to be just pretty significant percentage increases.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hand, let me take the example of printing and advertising. That's basically the budget for our editing and publishing the statutes, laws, and rules. To get an accurate picture of this, you really need the two-year window. So if you were to look at the FY14 actual and FY15 actuals, you would see that then the jump from that those budget years to the 226 figure is not that large. It's misleading in that it's showing you the first year in the budget, when with our publications and the way the contracts are written, the reviser tries to spread those out differently as they're needed. Going forward, the reviser tries to project that at a base amount, but in reality, if you'd look at the actuals in subsequent years, you'd see that same difference. Communications. Let me bring Tim Orr up. He may be able to explain the difference in that line item from 10,866 to 20,000.
Mr. Orr.
Well, Tim Orr, Deputy Reviser for Information Services. Yes, some of the jumps in these items are just that they've been upgrading network equipment and computer servers, virtualization of our servers. Instead of purchasing individual servers, we're able to virtualize and increase the uptime of our servers, and that equipment and that network equipment costs more. As part of the capital restoration, the networks are being enhanced to faster speeds, and so all that equipment costs more. The support contracts on it cost more, and that's why the communications, and the computer systems line items increase. We don't really have any control over those support contracts in particular. That's what the vendors charge us.
Any further questions? Okay. Thank you.
Chairman members, thank you.
Next is Legislative Auditor.
Mr. Chairman and members, again, for the record, I'm Jim Nobles, Legislative Auditor. And the Legislative Audit Commission met in November and approved two items as recommendations related to our budget. First, the Legislative Audit Commission recommended that the legislature provide the Office of the Legislative Auditor with a line item in law. The idea of that is that it would simply allow for more transparency, that all members of the legislature would see what the proposed appropriation for the Office of the Legislative Auditor would be and be able to vote on that. Then the commission also recommended a budget that would include a $500,000 a year increase. And the rationale behind that, and we've never asked for an increase before, we actually have had significant budget cuts in the past. The Office of Legislative Auditor used to be a staff of 80. We are now a staff of 60. But during that same time of losing staff, we have significantly increased our audit jurisdiction and responsibility. During that time, the legacy amendment passed. We have jurisdiction over the four funds. We do that work. MNsure was established. We, as I think you know from recent reports, do audits and evaluations of MNsure. We also have now explicit statutory responsibility to do data security audits. And it's an area that we really want to strengthen. It's been an area that has been an important part of our work over the years, but right now we are unable to do that work, frankly, because we've, again, lost all of our staff. It's the third time that we have built a team to be able to do IT security audit work, and then they have been hired away. So we would like to increase that staffing. Right now, we have one person. We would like to at least have that staffing level up to 4 or 5. It's a very specialized area. It's hard to recruit people. It's hard to keep them. So it's an important area. We would also like to increase the amount of audit work that we do for the legacy funds, because that's also a very visible area and a very important area, not only for the legislature but the public. Part of the increase also would give us money in an appropriation for a pool for performance increases. The Office of the Legislative Auditor is a bit different from some of the other offices, joint offices, in that when the Office of the Legislative Auditor was created, it was basically transferred from the executive branch into the legislative branch. And the decision was to keep employees in the Office of the Legislative Auditor in the civil service system. So all of the employees, with a few exceptions, in the Office of the Legislative Auditor are in the civil service, classified civil service, and that's how it's been from the beginning of our office. In addition, the legislature enacted a personnel plan for the Office of the Legislative Auditor that authorizes the legislative auditor to have a 4% of payroll performance pool, not a guaranteed performance increase for any individual, but simply a pool of 4% of payroll that then we use for performance increases. Those increases can be from 0 to beyond 4%, but they have to be within that 4% pool. In past years, we've actually, because of not having the money to fund that pool, we've not given performance increases. We didn't give any in fiscal 09, 010, or 10, fiscal 11. So, again, it would give us, in our appropriation, a pool that we could use at depending on people's performance reviews, performance increases. So that is our proposal, Mr. Chairman. I'd have to answer questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Nobles, could you tell me, in 2014, we show an amount paid out on claims. Can you tell me what that is?
Mr. Nobles.
Mr. Chairman, my recollection, Representative Senator Dames, my recollection is that that was a claim that was made against us that was a settlement that we negotiated through the Attorney General's office. It also involved a payment by the Department of Natural Resources.
Senator Dames.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Carlson.
This isn't a large item, Mr. Chairman, but Mr. Nobles, you did in 14 have out-of-state staff travel, and then you're having none. And if I recall, I think there's, you know, like there's a National Legislative Auditors Group and so on that I think historically we've participated in. Would that be the kind of travel that we're talking about, or is this, would this be something else?
Mr. Chairman,
I believe in professional development. That's why I'm asking the question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, we believe in professional development, too. We don't necessarily believe that it has to occur by out-of-state travel, however. So many years ago, we suspended our participation in meetings outside the state. I haven't gone to a professional meeting outside the state in over, I guess, 2 decades. We do spend a significant amount of money on professional development, but we find those opportunities locally. I know that there was one small amount of expenditure in fiscal 14 because one of our staff was invited to be on a panel at a conference that was out of state. I think part of those costs were paid for the organization, but we had to pick up some of those costs. I agree that participation in conferences outside can be beneficial. But in prioritizing our resources, it's just not something that I have supported. I know there are people that disagree with me about that on my own staff, probably here as well, but yeah, that's the choice I make.
Mr. Chairman, the reason I asked the question, I assumed it was something like that, with that very modest amount, that there would have been some involvement, but I didn't realize it had been 2 decades. Thank you.
Yeah. Any further questions? All right. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Nobles. Next, we have Legislative Reference Library. Ms. Lincoln.
Mr. Speaker, members of the committee, my name is Elizabeth Lincoln, and I'm the director of the Minnesota Legislative Reference Library. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I love to talk about the library, and I'd be happy to answer any questions at any time that you have. The library began in 1969, but the mission to provide information resources needed by the legislature has remained unchanged. What does the library do? You have a little brochure from us. We answer questions. That's one of the main things we do. Many of you take full advantage of that, but even if you don't, contact us directly. I'm sure we're helping your staff members who serve you. Our collection of print and electronic materials is focused on state-level public policy issues and on current and historical information on the Minnesota legislature. We track all of the studies and reports that are required by the legislature each year. These important documents provide transparency into the operations of the of state government agencies and programs. We're also the depository for state agency publications. We keep them in print, but since 2003, we've archived all of them so they can live on and be available to people in the future, even if agencies change their structure or change their file structure, too. We have a terrific periodical collection of state policy magazines and newsletters. With our custom alerting services, members and staff can follow specific magazines or get articles by topic. This allows us to maximize access to all the periodicals that we subscribe to. These services are completely web-based. New staff and new legislators have been enthusiastic users of these services. Our statistics on those custom services are at an all-time high. The library also pays for key electronic resources for users within the Capitol complex. So legislators and staff can link to the full text of newspapers and magazines like the Star Tribune and Pioneer Press, including the full electronic archive. We also pay for subscriptions to things like CCH Tax Guide, State Tax Guide, and Westlaw for attorneys and staff who need a password on a short-term basis. We track the activities, controversies, issues, and accomplishments of the legislature. We publish historical legislative statistics. We maintain databases of legislative information, governor's executive orders, executive branch reorganization orders. Some are really exciting. The library's database of vetoes over time is the only source of historical veto information. The backside of the handout lists our proposed budget for the coming biennium. The breakdown by statewide accounting categories isn't particularly illuminating, so I'll mention a couple specifics. Like almost all government agencies, our primary cost is staff. Our second highest cost is for supplies. That category includes subscriptions to nearly 400 periodicals, 30 newspapers, books and reports, as well as things like pens. The biggest change we've seen in recent years is a switch from print resources to electronic. As you know, the library is on the sixth floor of the state office building, but our goal is to allow you to access all of our resources on your desktop. A big change in the coming year is that we will be a small library annex will be part of the new state office building. We're excited about that, and we are thinking we're going to be a lot thinner afterwards because we'll be walking back and forth from one building to the other. So thank you for your attention, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from members? Thank you, Ms. Lincoln. And next is Legislative Commission on Pensions. Ms. Thurlow.
Hello, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Rachel Thurlow, and I'm the Deputy Director of the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement. I'm sitting in for Larry Martin, our Executive Director. There's a Pension Commission meeting going on right now, so I will be going through his presentation, and I will try to answer any questions that you may have. So to give a little background, the LCPR functions as if it were the subcommittees on pensions of the House and the Senate, jointly considering and making substantive recommendations on pending retirement bills during the legislative sessions, and as an oversight study commission reviewing Minnesota public pension plan operations and funding and working to resolve identified pension problems during the interim between sessions. The commission has 14 legislators as its members, 7 House and 7 Senate members with various years of experience being on the commission. The commission employs 4 staff, 3.5 full-time employees, complement. And the commission employs a consulting actuary, Deloitte Consulting. The commission budget request prepared using the LCC guidelines is the same level of expenditure and activity budget. Due to 2 staffing changes from retirements, specifically at Burick this past fall and Larry Martin in March of 2016, some salary savings can be expected, as you can see, between fiscal year 16 proposed and fiscal year 17 proposed. But the consulting services from the retained actuarial firms of Deloitte for infrequent consulting activities such as revising actuarial standards and reviewing experience studies and to augment developing staff expertise, specifically me, I'm newer, and substitute for retiring staff expertise such as Ed Berg and Larry Martin is anticipated to potentially offset these salary savings. And to just kind of break it down a little bit more, the expenditures of the commission are 2/3 staff salaries, 30% actuarial consulting charges, 1.2% interim meeting expenses, and 1.8% commission office expenses. Are there any questions?
Any questions from members?
Nice job pinch hitting.
Thank you. All right, thank you.
All right, next we have Legislative Coordinating Commission.
Members, my name is Diane Henry Wangenstein. I'm the Assistant Director with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. So as you know, the LCC is established by statute. It serves the it has approximately provides services to about 30 joint offices and commissions, some more active than others. It does payroll and accounting services and HR support. Beyond that, it coordinates joint legislative activities for the House and Senate, such as broadcasting, legislative broadcasting, accessibility, captioning, a litany of different things. It provides GIS services and maintains the legacy website. There's also the Office of Economic Status of Women that's part of the LCC, and drafts fiscal notes for the legislature then as well. The LCC, we're asking for the same budget level, so unchanged budget level. You'll see, though, that for the LCC budget, there was an appropriation of $145,000. That was for the Legislative Water Commission that's added to the base, so that's why it looks like it's a bit of an increase on it, but it's the same. 95% of the budget is for personnel cost. Over the years, we've seen a slight increase in personnel costs. We've had, as a part of this budget, we're seeing the full staff of the Office of Economic Status of Women came on in fiscal year 14, part of fiscal year 14. And then for fiscal year, we've just recently, this year, have the director of the Legislative Water Commission as well come to the office. We've also had some new commissions come over for that the LCC needs staff, so we increase the part-time, some of our part-time folks to also provide that additional support as well. That's the LCC budget, and I would be happy to take any questions if anybody has any, but then I'd like to go to the other offices, the fiscal agents, which is on the following page.
Anybody have any questions on the LCC budget? Why don't you go on to the next one?
Sure. Yeah. Mr. Chair, members. So the LCC other fiscal agents, that's kind of a litany of different budgets underneath that. Those are primarily joint legislative activities and joint committees that are staffed by the LCC. These are largely pass-through budgets that we budget, the money budgeted passed through to the funds and the activity underneath that specific commission or that activity. And we're proposing the same budget level as before. Some highlights in that, some of the larger budgets, the National Council of State Legislature and the Council of State Government, that's the second and third line under the table. Those are primarily the fees for the legislature. We're anticipating about 2 to 3% increase and fiscal year 16 and 17 for those budgets. Another fairly active budget is the public television budget. You'll see there that for that budget, we organize and we work with the legislative broadcasts and caption costs for the legislature. Any unspent funds, cost savings from the contract negotiations, we are planning to use those for being strategic investments in computer and software purchases for the House Public Information and the Senate Media Office and as well.
Any questions, members? They're going easy on you.
I know. finally, maybe for the Mississippi River Parkway Commission, that's chaired by Representative Johnson, who's not able to be here this evening. That's the page number 8, the following page on that. That's a part of a national commission as well. It's a fairly active commission. Mainly, this commission, being as active as it is, does have some outside staffing that we utilize. About 25% of this budget goes for membership participation, 22% for national dues, and then 40% for outside staffing as well.
Any questions on that? Senator Pappas?
Actually, Ms. Henry Wagenstein, going back one page, the Great Lakes Commission, is that dues? I don't see really a budget for that. So
Ms. Henry Wagenstein?
Sure, Mr. Chair. Senator, that is the dues primarily for the Great Lakes Commission and out-of-state, travel for the members to participate in those national meetings. Dues are about $60,000, and the balance, about $6,000 or so, are for the travel for the members.
Senator Pappas?
Okay.
Any other? Representative Pepin?
On that same page, you went over quickly the NCSL and the CSG dues.
Mm-hmm.
Does that include travel, or is that just what the dues costs are? What is that?
Does
it cover?
Representative, Mr. Chair, that's primarily just the dues for the NCSL. So NCSL's dues are about altogether, I know it's 195. I don't know the breakdown. I'm sorry, off the top of my head. So,
and what do we get for the dues?
Would we participate in the dues?
Yeah. What does that include? It seems kind of high for dues. So I was wondering what we get for the dues.
Yeah. I might look to Mr. Hubinger to answer that one.
Good to be a member.
Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, NCSL provides a large array of services to state legislatures around the country and provide technical support. They have expertise in almost every policy area that staff and members can rely on. They also represent the interests of state legislatures in Congress.
Representative Pepin.
Mr. Hubinger, so then every state then would likely have a fee that they pay to NCSL for them to manage. That's how they're funded?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, that's correct.
And is that
Representative Pepin?
Is that the same then, Mr. Hubinger, for Council of State Governments?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, that's correct.
Thank you.
Any other members? Yep. Senator Hamm?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just quickly on those items, Mr. Hubinger, how long have we been members of the NCSL and Council of State Government?
Mr. Hubinger?
Just curiosity.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hamm, we'd have to get back to you. It's been at least 25 years.
It's a question, NCSL. How long have we been members?
Yes.
Do you know?
Well, I've been here 43 years, and we were members then. Because we hosted, I think, my very first term, we had NCSL in Minneapolis. So I happen to recall that particular event.
Mr. Chairman.
Unless we dropped it at some point, but I don't think we ever did.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I believe they just had their 40th anniversary this last year.
Yeah.
During the year we
Speaker Sable was one of the early presidents, and maybe it was my second term then, but it's quite a long time that I remember we had a big event here in Minneapolis, and we were one of the early hosts for an NCSL convention. But just as an example, we used to have a personnel committee of rules, and now each caucus has a personnel committee for caucus staff, but this was for the entire House, and I happened to have chaired that. And We wanted to know how we compared with various job positions and so on in the Minnesota House, and NCSL provided just great support for that, gave us a very good and extensive report, and it was no charge. So that was something that we had as a benefit with NCSL. So they do provide services. That's just one that comes to mind that I was directly involved in.
Representative Carlson, you've been here exactly 10 times longer than I have.
I'm still working on remaining for a while. I don't know about what your plans are, but
I might be gone before you are. Any other questions? All right. Thank you. And is this the one on the Citizens Commission on Minnesota Resources? Yes. Ms. Thornton.
Mr. Chair, my name is Susan Thornton, and I'm the director of the LCCMR, Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. And the commission is made up of 17 members, 5 from the House, 5 from the Senate, and 7 non-legislative appointed members. And we make funding recommendations to the legislature from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, which the income stream of that comes from the 40% net lottery proceeds and investment by the State Board of Investment. I believe I'm your first commission in front of you that's non-general fund. Essentially, Mr. Chair and members, our budgets are made up of salaries and member expenses and then general operating costs. So the salary line reflects current salaries as adopted by LCC, and then the other benefits and travel and subsistence lines reflect potential increased costs for our annual funding cycle. Even though we're on annual funding cycle, we find ourselves holding 3 cycles for proposal hearings in order to be ready to have a bill before the legislature. And we operate generally outside of the legislative session. Non-legislative members receive both a per diem and expenses. We also have technical and peer review line item on here, both required in statute. We try and not spend that line item that's there, and we've been doing quite well lately, but I do feel I have to budget for it, and we've been doing much more of that electronically. So it's been more efficient, and it's been a cost savings, but it is budgeted there. And then the other thing, members, I will mention that the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund budget has a discrete beginning and ending time frame, and so any dollars remaining at the end of the biennium cancel back to the purpose of the trust fund. We do not have any carry forward within the LCCMR budget.
Any questions from members?
Senator Bach? Refresh my memory. Do we still have money flowing from the cigarette tax into the trust fund? 2 cents, future resources fund, or what was it called? I served years on environment, but did Governor Plenty take that away?
Ms. Thornton?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, in budget shortfall of 2003, that was changed to the general fund.
Okay.
Still exists in statute, though, if you want to change it back.
Senator Bach?
No.
Any other questions?
I wasn't that surprised at the answer.
Mr. Chairman. So, Ms. Thornton, your budget comes out of the trust fund? I just wanted to clarify that.
Ms. Thornton.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, and yes, it's solely out of the trust fund. Statute has us capped at 4% of the amount available for the biennium, and our budget is at 1.2%.
Any other questions? Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Mark Johnson, the Executive Director of the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. I'm new to the position, just came on in October, so bear with me, please. You're familiar that, well, first of all, this is kind of an inherited budget for me, but I'm trying to deal with it as much as can, and it's really quite good. The council has 12 members, of course, 4 legislators and 8 citizens. They're all volunteers to the volunteers to the council or appointed to the council as volunteers. Our staff is small. It's four. And other than salaries, the biggest area of our budget is really built into the website and design. The reason for that is that we want to stay, it was for a number of years, the staff has been trying to maintain efficiency rather than numbers. In fact, I think just before I came on, the fourth staff person was added, and that was a receptionist, so we could do more hands-on with the different project managers. Website itself gives us an opportunity for where the expenditures we're making into it actually allow the project managers to go in, do real-time, do online corrections, additions, maintenance of their project. So we get that information in real time. Also updates that information now real time under the map so we can see what the achievements are that are happening. And, of course, that information flows through the LCC to the legacy website as well. Trying to think if there's anything else in particular on this. Under other expenses down at the bottom, the second to the last line, you see it coming in 2016 and 17. Basically, those were lines to balance the budget. It's surplus area, and I don't anticipate us necessarily spending that money, but there may be another reason that the previous director had in mind when he put the budget as it is. So, full disclosure. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Questions from members? Senator Pappas?
So, Mr. Johnson, your funds come from the sales tax, correct? And then is your budget also come from that source?
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, yes, our funds come from the Clean Water Land and Legacy Tax, the third that goes to the Outdoor Heritage Fund.
You just talked about it, but maybe you could just go a little slower, the other operating costs. Is that what you were talking about?
Yes, ma'am.
Proposed 16 and 17. Could you just say that again? I kind of missed the first half.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin. Yes, on other operating costs, basically in looking through the budget and trying to fine-tune to come to that 608 or 607,000, depending on the respective year, 16 and 17, the anticipated expenditures that I see based on talking with staff for the other areas, there's still a $32,000 and $20,000 discrepancies and overage in the budget, as it appears to me. Now, I don't have the detail from the previous director yet to find out what was in his mind when this budget went through. So that's the reason I wanted to disclose to you that I don't know what those expenses. Right now, those are a fluff, basically, in the budget. I hate to say that, but to be very blunt, that's where I'm looking at it right now. I don't believe we'll be spending those, but there may be an area that was previously anticipated for them.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Johnson, then, similar to what Ms. Thornton said, any unexpended dollars at the end of the biennium then goes back to the general fund?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, that's correct. They go right back to the fund and carry forward.
To the legacy fund.
To the legacy fund, yes.
I'm sorry, not the general fund.
Okay. Senator Bach.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Johnson, you might not know the answer to this, but does that happen annually? We make appropriations annually out of Lessard SAMS, or does it happen on a biannual basis?
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Speaker, Senator Bach, do we actually put forth our Bill of Recommendations on an annual basis? This year, however, there is a biannual appropriation for administrative, if I may ask Mr. Hubinger. Yes, and he confirms biannual is the administrative budget.
Previously, it was annually?
Mr. Johnson.
So this is a change.
Maybe you want to come up, Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bach, I think it's happened a couple of times where the administrative budget has been appropriated biannually, just so that there's no question about staffing if the bill in the off year doesn't get passed until late, that we don't know if there's going to be funding for the staff.
And so that's fine. I was wondering when the $30,000 might cancel back, so it wouldn't cancel back till the end of the biennium if it wasn't expended.
Schubinger, yeah. Okay. Any further questions? Sounds great. Thank you, gentlemen.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh,
and then
Senator.
These budgets are all approved by the budget committees in the House and Senate.
Mr. Hubinger.
Legislative Energy Commission, Ms. Levinson-Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Annie Levinson-Falk. I'm the Executive Director of the Legislative Energy Commission, or LEC. The LEC consists of 20 members of the legislature, 10 from the House and 10 from the Senate, coming from the Committees on Energy, Environment, Agriculture, and Transportation Policy, as well as the NextGen Energy Board. Its purpose is to dive more deeply into complex energy policy questions that require more time than is possible in committees during session, and to do so in a way that considers the broader context of the way that those energy questions impact the various policy issues represented by the membership on the commission. The LEC is funded by an assessment on electric and natural gas utilities and bulk petroleum terminals. The assessment can be requested by the co-chairs annually. We have not yet prepared fiscal year 16 and 17 budgets, so what you see in front of you is basically a carry forward of the fiscal year 15 budget. You'll notice it is larger than the fiscal year 14 actual. That is because the FY14 basically represents a partial year of spending. I'm the first full-time staff position to be brought on by the LEC, and I came in partway through the FY14, which is why you see a lower spending that year. So because no decisions have been made on fiscal year 16 and 17, this is a preliminary budget. The budget primarily covers the cost of commission meetings, staff compensation, and related activities. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from members? You got off easy, too, I think.
Thank you.
So.
Mr. Chairman, before we leave these, if we could just for a quick minute go back to the LCC page where we deal with dues and so on. I have a question, Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Hubinger? Carlson.
Mr. Hubinger, I'm just kind of curious because we have some other commissions, one that at least Senator Pappas and I are quite familiar with, the Midwest Higher Education Compact. The dues for that are paid for with an appropriation from the Higher Education Finance Committee, and it goes directly then to the Higher Education Services Office. And then they pay the dues for the compact. And basically what I'm kind of interested in is how is this list historically developed where we pay dues through LCC as opposed to other committees that would appropriate for various membership dues? And if I thought long enough, there may be some other examples. It's just that I'm quite familiar with that one because I've served on it through the years.
Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, the LCC on behalf of the legislature has paid the dues for CSG and NCSL for 25 or 30 years. The LCC also pays for the dues for the Mississippi River Parkway Commission and for the Great Lakes Commission. Those are the only four that I'm aware of.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm aware of what you're talking about there. My question was, why are some dues in the LCC and some appropriated separately by legislative committees to other state agencies? In that case, that would be the Higher Education Services Office with my example. And if you don't know what the history there is, I'm just curious why some are here and some are other places. But it's not a huge amount. I think, what is it, Senator Pappas, $100,000 a year or something
Senator
like
Pappas.
That.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think it is about $100,000. It goes to the Office of Higher Education,
yeah.
Senator Carlson.
No, that's what I said. But
you called it the Higher Education Services Office.
Oh, did I?
I went been that for about a decade or more.
Yeah, well, I date myself every once in a while.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Carlson,
Senator Pappas,
my conjecture is that because the Midwest Higher Education Compact is just education, it makes sense for it to come out of the education budget, whereas NCSL and CSG, there's multiple issues. I suppose the argument with the Great Lakes Commission or the Parkway Commission, it could have gone to a policy committee. But it might cover several different committees and not just one.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm not advocating one way or the other. I was just curious what the history was that some are, and maybe Senator Pappas has nailed it with
Representative Hoppe, did you have a...
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Huebner, feel free to not answer this question because I don't want to get you in trouble. One of the things that we talked about doing is joining the National Conference of Insurance Legislators on a bipartisan, bicameral basis. And one of the ideas that a number of us had, if you like it, I'll give you names. If you don't, I'll take the blame. We were thinking about having some of the Minnesota-domiciled insurance companies pay for it, as long as it was bipartisan and bicameral and, you know, appropriate people from the House and the Senate were sent to whatever, wherever the conference was. And I think the Attorney General had an issue with us joining that organization. And so I don't want to put you on the spot, and, you know, we can talk offline. But and I'm not saying the Attorney General's wrong, but if we did want to pursue something like this, is this kind of where we would start with it?
Mr. Huebner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hoppe. So the LCC has been used as the vehicle for having paying for the dues on behalf of the legislature. If this is a program that's primarily a beneficiary for the legislature, that the LCC might be a mechanism for that.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Huebner. And I'm, if we could figure out a way to do this where we could have outside groups pay for it that the Attorney General is okay with, I'll get back to you. But I just kind of wanted to double check. Thank you.
Any other questions? No comments? That's it for us then.
I had
so, Senator Pappas?
Mr. Chairman and members, I just wanted to mention that there's legislation that's been moving through the House and the Senate for the three of the ethnic councils, the Asian, Latino, and African-American council or black council, to be housed, to be moved and housed underneath the LCC. So I think the LCC members might want to follow that legislation and weigh in on that.
Okay. Very good. Anything else? Then we are adjourned. Thank you.